The headlines this hour, at least six people, including students, are killed in the Afghan capital, Kabul, after multiple explosions ripped through two educational centers. The cabinet of Pakistan's newly elected Prime Minister, Shehbaz Sharif, is sworn in days after lawmakers ousted Imran Khan from power. And Shanghai reports seven new COVID deaths as China's most populous city remains in strict lockdown. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muniz. Thanks for joining us. Let's begin with the news from the Afghan capital, where three huge explosions ripped through two educational centers this morning, leaving a number of casualties.
People gathered to clear out the site after the blast. The second explosion happened in an alley. We heard an explosion and some people fell on the ground, while others ran away. Security forces arrived an hour later.
I was there when the first explosion hit. I carried as many people as I could on my motorbike and took them to the hospital.
Two back-to-back blasts targeted Boyce High School, located in a neighborhood that belongs to the Shia Hazara community in the western part of Kabul. Earlier, another explosion hit a tuition center in the same neighborhood. There are conflicting reports on the number of casualties. The Taliban say six people were killed and 25 others were injured. Unofficial reports, however, put the number of deaths at 25. So far, there has been no claim of responsibility. Iran has condemned the attacks, urging Afghanistan's acting government, led by the Taliban, to identify those behind the terrorist act and to bring them to justice. Pakistan's new cabinet has been sworn in following weeks of political turmoil in the country. The swearing-in ceremony was held days after the parliament elected Shehbaz Sharif to succeed Imran Khan as prime minister. Earlier this month, lawmakers removed Imran Khan from power in a no-confidence vote. The motion was lodged by the opposition, accusing the former premier of failing to revive the economy and to crack down on corruption. But Khan blamed the United States for his ouster, saying that Washington organized a conspiracy against him. China reports seven more coronavirus deaths in Shanghai, where authorities are combating the first major outbreak since 2020. The new deaths raise the city's total from the recent outbreak to 10. There have been hundreds of thousands of infections in Shanghai over the past few weeks. More than 20,000 new infections have been reported for Tuesday. Many of Shanghai's 25 million residents have been confined to their homes since March. China has also introduced lockdowns in other cities hit with less serious outbreaks of the Omicron variant. The French presidential election has roared back to relevance as voters are upset over the inflation crisis. Many are upset with the austerity policies of President Emmanuel Macron, although others are also skeptical of his contender, Marine Le Pen's promises. From Paris, Ramin Mazari has more.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person.
Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression
and the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow is initiating a new phase of its special military operation in Ukraine.
East of Ukraine.
The operation in the east of Ukraine is aimed, as was announced from the very beginning, to fully liberate the Donetsk and Luhansk republics. And this operation will continue. Another stage of this operation in eastern Ukraine is beginning, and I am sure this will be a very important moment of this entire special operation.
Earlier, the Russian Defense Ministry reported dozens of airstrikes in eastern Ukraine overnight, targeting 13 Ukrainian positions in the Donbas region. The ministry also issued a new ultimatum for Ukrainian forces in the besieged port city of Mariupol to lay down their arms. On Monday, Russia took over Kremina, the first city to fall in the east in the new Russian offensive. This has been confirmed by Ukrainian officials. The Russian war in Ukraine began in late February. The UN says nearly 5 million people have fled since the conflict started. Italians have condemned the Israeli forces for raiding the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds and attacking Palestinians who were inside praying. A growing number of Italians believe that Israel should be held accountable for the continued atrocities and violations against Palestinians and their holy sites.
Italians have slammed Israel's continued pursuit of repressive, violent practices against Palestinians following the killing of several Muslims, including a teenage boy, by Israeli security forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, a major holy site in Al-Quds, last week. Tensions between Israelis and Palestinians have been running high over the past weeks, with Israeli forces carrying out numerous raids in the West Bank, which led to the deaths of a number of Palestinians. The latest round of violence by Israel on Monday saw its soldiers forcing their way into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and removing worshippers from its courtyards in order to allow settlers to exclusively mark the Passover holiday into the compound.
Once again, during Ramadan, a new aggression against Palestinians by the Israeli regime. This time they caught off guard men, women and children who were praying at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This again has shown the nature of the Israeli regime and the complacence of the international community.
Last year, during Ramadan, similar violence broke out, sparking the biggest conflict in years between Palestinian resistance movements and Israel, an 11-day war which only ended following intervention by international mediators. The violence against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds came at a particularly sensitive time. Ramadan this year coincided with the Christian Holy Week, which ends today, Monday, the second day of Eastertide. Catholic faithful have strongly condemned the latest killing of Palestinians by Israeli security forces.
For the umpteenth time, it is a provocation by Israel. This action were just a fresh provocation. There is a lack of respect for others' beliefs. During Easter time and Ramadan, we have to be more thoughtful.
Tensions. There are due exclusively to Israeli occupation policy. However, the international community seems to have lost interest in the conflict. By not taking any side, the Italian government is supporting Israel in practical terms.
Last meeting between Italian and Palestinian authorities took place in December when Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki met his Italian counterpart Luigi Di Maio on the sidelines of the 7th edition of the Rome Med Dialogues Conference. Other than reiterating Italy's traditional support for the Palestinian Authority, Di Maio reaffirmed Italy's commitment to a just, sustainable and negotiated two-state solution between Palestine and Israel as the key to stability and prosperity in the enlarged Mediterranean. Max Civili, Rome.
Palestinians have held a funeral for a young girl who died of her injuries sustained during an Israeli attack in the occupied West Bank. 18-year-old Hanan Mahmoud Khadour was on her way home when she was injured by Israeli fire during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp a few days ago. A spokesman for Hamas has described the killing as a heinous crime, saying the Zionist regime will not be able to undermine the Palestinians' struggle for their legitimate rights. The northern West Bank city of Jenin has lately become the scene of an armed resistance campaign. Since early this month, Israeli forces have been attacking the refugee camp in Jenin as well as other cities in the West Bank. The raids have left a large number of Palestinians dead or wounded, escalating tensions across the occupied territories. Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip say that their air defenses confronted intruding Israeli aircraft that targeted an area in the south of the besieged enclave. Israel says the airstrike came in response to a rocket fired into the occupied territories from Gaza. Earlier, we were joined by Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent in the Gaza Strip, for more details.
Israeli fighter jets have attacked an area in this west of the southern Gaza Strip, town of Khan Yunis, close to the Mediterranean. That location belongs to Hamas's military wing, the Izzed Din al-Qassam brigades. The bombing took place while Palestinians in Gaza were just getting ready to have their pre-dawn meals to prepare for the fasting for the holy month of Ramadan. In recent weeks, the Israeli regime has escalated attacks on Palestinians, whether in Al-Quds, in the occupied West Bank, or Gaza. Historically, the Israeli regime increases attacks on Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan. We have also to remember that last year, during the month of Ramadan, that was the 11-day Israeli war on Gaza, where scores of people were killed and injured, including dozens of children and women. And also earlier on Monday, Israeli tanks made a limited incursion east of the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Hanun. And also tonight, a young lady in the occupied West Bank succumbed to her wounds, who she was shot earlier by Israeli forces. So we see in recent weeks dozens of Palestinians being killed by Israeli regime forces, an increase in the hostilities against the Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, in Al-Quds, and especially in Al-Quds as Palestinians. Palestinians are observing the holy month of Ramadan, which is one of the holiest months of the Islamic calendar.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has held a gathering in the Lebanese capital Beirut to commemorate Palestinian Prisoners Day. Speakers from resistance groups have stressed that armed resistance is the only hope for liberating prisoners in Palestine. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has attended the event and has filed this report.
Dozens of people gathered in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, to mark Palestinian Prisoners' Day, a day when resistance factions and their supporters stand in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails.
On this day, which marks the Day of Palestinian Prisoners, I am certain that the people of the Arab and Muslim worlds, as we see in this gathering, will show the true unity with the resistance and the path of the resistance, especially with the issue of the prisoners and Al-Quds, which are the emblem of the Palestinian struggle.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that one cannot be truly with Palestine if they are not with the resistance.
It has become clear that whoever is with Palestine should be with the resistance. Anyone who has declared that he is with Palestine but hasn't taken one practical step in supporting the resistance is not truly with Palestine. Military resistance comes first. The other forms of resistance back and help to serve the actual resistance with arms.
He recalled that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, late Imam Khomeini took the decision to close the Israeli embassy and reinstate the Palestinian embassy before declaring he was with Palestine. Liberating Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails has become a struggle for all resistance factions as it is linked directly to the Palestinian cause. They stress that liberating prisoners can only be realized completely by liberating Palestine. Officials of Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad considered that history has proven that only armed struggle can be a path to liberating both Al-Quds and the prisoners who continue to suffer from Israel's aggressive policies. More than 4,400 Palestinian prisoners are currently held in Israeli jails. Minors and women are among 500 detainees under the so-called administrative detention policy, under which they are held without charge or trial for an indefinite time period. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
People in Indian-administered Kashmir are upholding Islamic values and rituals to add them to their traditions, mainly for those who are observing the holy month of Ramadan. Our correspondent Shana Bhatt has more.
Tablecloths are spread on different corners of the mosque. Old and young are volunteering to help prepare for the iftar time, the sun sets, and the time of breaking the fast. Fayaz Ahmed Punjabi has been organizing iftar each Ramadan since 2014. He intends to fulfill one of the main values of Islam, equality.
Islam teaches us equality, and when we sit together to eat here, there is no difference between rich and poor. There is no black and white. We sit here as one ummah, with no superior, no inferior.
Here, the holy month of Ramadan is observed by the majority of people. Besides attending daily prayers, the Muslim men and women regularly go to mosques for Quran recitations.
Reciting the Quran during this holy month has a huge reward. We organize these gatherings to attain the rewards Allah has promised. In this holy month, Allah has promised forgiveness, and the best way is to follow the book of Allah.
The Muslim majority Kashmir has witnessed decades of political instability and economic slump due to continued tensions in the region. Although all these difficulties have resulted in poverty, most people here are fully committed to their Islamic obligations during this month. Meanwhile, a large number of non-governmental organizations actively work for the poorer and the weaker people of this region, assisting them through charity. In Muslim majority Kashmir, Ramadan rejuvenates hope. Young and old actively participate in different endeavors to attain greater rewards. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Environmental protection is one of the most fundamental and essential tasks in the country. March 6th, 2022. Another point that is also related to the Environment Protection Organization is preventing the utilization of agricultural lands for other purposes. We have heard that in many cases, agricultural lands in the vicinity of cities and in some plains are used for other purposes. This should be stopped because it is surely to the disadvantage of national interest. Agricultural lands should be expanded. Of course, this is not only the responsibility of the Environment Protection Organization. The Ministry of Agriculture and some other organizations are influential in this regard. Another issue which is also related to the environment is the development of non-fossil energies. The energies which are not reliant on oil, energies such as the nuclear energy, which is increasingly being used in the world. In our region, many different countries are moving towards the nuclear energy. Solar, wind, and other such energies are essential.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Environment Protection Organization is responsible in this regard, but other organizations such as the Energy Ministry and others have a very important role in this regard as well. All of them must carry out their duty. Therefore, work in environmental areas is fundamental work at the national level. This is something that concerns national interest, and therefore it is everyone's responsibility. Executive officials should pay attention to this matter as well. By God's favor, they will do so. Of course, all big endeavors are carried out with the public's backing. Today is tree planting day, and all the people can be influential in this regard, in the true sense of the word. They should plant and preserve trees and prevent the disappearance of trees and gardens that exist in and out of cities. They should expand plants and good and beneficial vegetation on a daily basis. This is the people's work. They can completely participate in it and help the administration and officials. By God's favor, they will accomplish this. Once more, I wish to congratulate all the dear people and all the addressees of these statements on this Eid, and I ask Allah the Exalted to bestow health on everyone. Greetings be upon you, and God's mercy and blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The UK has announced a controversial deal with Rwanda to send illegal immigrants and asylum seekers to the East African country. The British government claims this scheme, which is worth $156 million, would have stopped smugglers from sending thousands of desperate migrants on dangerous journeys across the English Channel every year. Over 28,000 migrants and refugees have crossed the English Channel in 2021. That's three times higher than the year before. In November last year, 27 people died while trying to reach the UK when their boat sank in the worst disaster to occur on the Channel. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson hailed the deal with Kigali, saying the East African country with a sketchy human rights record is one of the safest countries in the world, globally recognized for its record of welcoming and integrating migrants. Rwanda already hosts some 140,000 refugees in six refugee camps. However, rights groups and refugee organizations swiftly slammed what they called a cruel, inhumane, and neo-colonial plan. They also questioned both its costs to British taxpayers and its effect on migration. According to a recent poll, 60% of the British public is dissatisfied with the Johnson government's migration policy. The UN's refugee agency has also voiced opposition, saying people fleeing persecution should not be treated like commodities. The world body stated that such arrangements simply shift asylum responsibilities, evade international obligations, and are contrary to the letter and spirit of the Refugee Convention. Others have criticized Rwanda's human rights record, accusing the government of torturing, intimidating, and assassinating their political opponents, and persecuting marginalized people. Johnson said the deal will become a new international standard in handling migration, but human rights groups have warned that the plan could set a dangerous trend for other Western countries to adopt their offshore asylum schemes.
Well, Britain has a good history of trading in human beings. As you know, the whole sort of movement of Africans to North America, Britain was a leading player in shipping slaves from Africa to North America and to Caribbean islands. So Britain has a track record of trading in human beings. So one could, if you like, describe it in that manner. But I think the evil aspect of what's really happening in 2022, that may have happened 200 years ago and when later on slavery was banned. But the reality is that perhaps we are living in a new epoch of slavery at this time.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has vowed to curb the English Channel crossings. However, there has been a drastic increase in the number of people arriving on British shores on small boats in recent years. The government passed a Nationality and Borders Bill that would make it a criminal offence to enter the UK illegally, and it would introduce life sentences for people smugglers. But the UN's refugee agency criticised the bill, saying it would penalise most refugees seeking asylum in the country and would create an asylum model that undermines established international refugee protection rules and practices. Meanwhile, the refugee deal with Rwanda comes as more Ukrainians arrive in the UK through different visa programs that the Johnson government has rolled out in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine war. Over 55,000 visas have been issued to refugees fleeing the conflict in Ukraine so far. This clearly shows a contradiction between the proposed policy and the British government's attitude toward Ukrainian refugees.
The reality is that the British government is acting in a very racist manner as well. You know, they might say that, okay, it was sort of media correspondence who depicted the European, the Ukrainian refugees in that manner. But the reality is that the implementation of this policy perhaps smacks of what I call racism, clear and without any sort of dilution to it.
Unlike what the British government claims, those seeking to cross the English Channel and land on British soil are not illegal economic migrants, but are mainly those who have escaped bloodshed, war and terror. They are people fleeing oppression and violence from Afghanistan, West Asia or even Europe. They are exercising their right under the UN Refugee Convention, which the UK was a founding signatory of, to seek asylum in a country of their choosing. And let's not forget that they are no different from Ukrainian refugees.
Israeli forces have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and attacked the Palestinian worshippers there. The raid began at dawn on Friday when Israeli forces entered the compound through the Moroccan Gate, also known as the Mughrabi Gate, throwing stun grenades and shooting rubber bullets at the crowd indiscriminately. 400 Palestinians were arrested. Media reports said the Israeli forces also attacked paramedics and press crews, chased them in the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque, and beat a number of them. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society reported that 152 fasting Palestinians had been transferred to hospitals in the occupied Al-Quds for injuries as a result of the raid. Following the Friday prayers, people held rallies in the Gaza Strip in solidarity with the Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
They want it for themselves. They want the Palestinians gone. They want Islam to be gone from Palestine and Christianity too, everything except Judaism. So really, they don't mind having this as a flashpoint for them, as a center of dispute. They want this dispute to go on until they win. That's what they're looking for. And every time they bring settlers there to cause trouble, it's part of what they see as a continuing war for their control of the land. That's what this is about.
The regime has stepped up its deadly acts of aggression across the Palestinian territories since the beginning of Ramadan, as a result of which, Palestinians put up a stronger resistance to counter the aggression. The events unfolding in the occupied territories are reminiscent of clashes between the Israeli forces and Palestinians in the West Bank last year that led to an 11-day war between the resistance groups in Gaza and Israel. Over 250 Palestinians were killed in the war, many of them were women and children. Observers now believe that more confrontations are imminent. As the pressure mounts, Palestinians have stepped up their retaliatory operations against Israelis. Over the past 3 weeks, Palestinians have carried out 4 such retaliatory operations, killing over a dozen Israelis. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has given the regime's forces a free hand to crack down on Palestinians. He has also called on Israeli civilians with gun licenses to carry weapons in public.
They can find ways to make the Israeli occupation painful, and already actually quite a few Israelis over the last decade have emigrated elsewhere. You have Israeli immigration into Europe and the United States and to Australia. Possibly as many as a million Israelis have done that. If the Palestinians can make it painful enough for the Israelis might just disappear.
When some Arab states announced the normalization of ties with Israel, they claimed that their moves will help the Palestinian cause. But the events of the past couple of years have shown that the only contribution their newly established ties with Tel Aviv made to Palestinians has been even more suffering. In the absence of any accountability, Israel is expected to put even more pressure on the people of Palestine. But the Palestinians are indicating that they remain steadfast to keep fighting against the Israeli occupation with or without international support.
Racial tensions are running high in Grand Rapids, Michigan, after police this week released footage of a white officer lying on the back of an unarmed black man, shooting him in the head. Patrick Leoya, 26, was killed on April 4th after a struggle during a traffic stop. State police are investigating the incident. The officer is currently on administrative leave pending the outcome of the investigation. Authorities say he would not be identified unless criminal charges are pressed against him. The family of Leoya called the video of the shooting, quote, the most horrifying thing they've ever seen, and asked for the officer's name to be released. The shooting has led to protests in the area, with activists expressing grief and frustration with years of inaction on policing issues by Grand Rapids leaders.
Given the U.S.'s long history of police brutality, from Rodney King to George Floyd and now today, we can't be shocked. And I think that the black community should and is justified in being angry at the establishment and seeking methods outside of the establishment and the political structure for seeking change.
The fatal shooting of the unarmed black man by the white officer is the latest on a very long list of similar incidents. Police killings of black men have dominated national debates in recent years, particularly after the 2020 murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, which triggered persistent protests across America. The deep-rooted problem lingers on. So far this year, over 250 people have been fatally shot by on-duty police officers nationwide. The latest case is another bitter reminder that the system in the United States has failed to take measures to resolve the pressing problem. The April 4th shooting has once again brought deadly police violence in America under the spotlight. Civil rights organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, has been quick to react. The NAACP, which tries to advance justice for African Americans, said in a statement that the shooting is horrifying and deeply frustrating because Americans had meaningful legislation designed to avoid exactly what they are witnessing in this week's police video. It said the involved officer has blood on his hands, and so do the senators who killed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. The piece of legislation was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives in March 2021, but bipartisan negotiations in the U.S. Congress over the police reform bill ended in stalemate. The sweeping legislation was passed by the House amid outcry after the murder of George Floyd. It would have banned chokeholds and qualified immunity for law enforcement. It would have also created national standards for policing in an effort to increase accountability.
Lack of efforts to reform the system that are coming from the top. There's no real incentive for legislators to reform when they are benefiting off of the corrupt policing system and corrupt judicial system that this country has. There's also a lack of struggle in the organizations, a lack of structure in the organizations that are struggling against police brutality.
The failure to pass the police reform has been considered as a setback for the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden, who had energetically supported the legislation. President Biden has faced growing calls to sign an executive order to reform the police, but has failed to act. Experts believe ethnic minorities in America, especially African Americans, are facing a very deep-rooted problem that will not be resolved anytime soon. Observers have largely attributed this to the racist roots of American policing and social structures.
Nearly 7 weeks have passed since the start of the war in Ukraine. Russia is now focusing on taking territory in the eastern regions of the country. Ukraine and Russia are building up their military forces in the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk.
It's a very serious situation. The fact that the Russian forces are there have made significant moves, especially in the east of Ukraine and other parts, is unacceptable to the United States, and they're not prepared to negotiate. And I believe that their advice to Zelensky, talking into Biden today, to assured him of about, what was $130 million more worth of equipment, that they want them to continue fighting, to continue resisting, but they're not going to send any troops there.
Over the past weeks, Ukraine has enjoyed the support of Western powers, especially the United States. Western nations have sent different types of weapons to Ukraine worth millions of dollars. The U.S. is to announce $750 million in new military aid for Ukraine. The new military aid package would likely include military equipment such as unmanned surface vehicles, Mi-17 helicopters, howitzers, and protective equipment against possible chemical attacks. The Pentagon has hosted leaders from the top eight U.S. weapons manufacturers to discuss the industry's capacity to help arm Ukraine, even if Russia's invasion lasts as long as 2 years.
So there will be a lot more people dying because the United States is insistent, I think, that Putin's forces have to be forced out of Ukraine before this is all over. And it's not going to be happening anytime soon.
Resupplying as well as planning for a longer war were expected to be discussed at the meeting. The Pentagon has said smaller systems such as Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stinger anti-aircraft missiles have proved to be the most useful weapons. Washington and its Western allies have been shipping these weapons to Ukraine on a nearly daily basis. A partnership between Lockheed Martin and Raytheon Technologies makes the anti-tank Javelin. Raytheon manufactures the Stinger, which shoots down aircraft. Ukraine is ramping up its campaign for military aid even as the U.S. accelerates shipments of weapons to Kiev. Arms lobbyists and their underlings in Congress and the Pentagon are scrambling now to unlock more funds for the military-industrial complex to pump out weapons to Europe.
Unless there are other parties within the world community and also even within NATO to resist this type of policy, it's going to be a very long and costly war. And the cost is going to be borne by the world community, which will suffer in increasing food prices, increasing energy, increasing starvation for millions of people.
But amid the unanimous support for Ukraine, there are critical voices that have been raised against supplying weapons to Ukraine. It's argued that the money channeled to the military industry is used to fuel more bloodshed in Ukraine. Hawks in the West lobby recklessly for NATO to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
They believe that a world empire effectively can be created, in which the United States is the fundamental maker of the rules. Now, every attempt to create an empire in the world has ended up in either failure or disaster. They haven't learned those lessons.
That could be a direct military confrontation between Russia and Ukraine. It's also feared that a nuclear war is also becoming a possibility. A recent poll has shown that the U.S. is being drawn into an all-out war with Russia.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام قليل تدوم عليه أرجى من كثير مملول منه.
Imam Ali said, "A small action which is continued with regularity is more beneficial than a long one performed with disgust." Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Dear friends, we've been talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali in so many programs up until now. Do you not think that it is amazing that we are continuously talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali, and we have not run out of things to say based upon the statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam? Dear friends, the people who are intimately and closely connected with the Almighty Allah have this kind of effect upon humanity. They have this kind of an effect upon history and time. There are so many things that truly we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam that sometimes it is unimaginable. But we find that the Holy Prophet and the divinely appointed Imams and the Ahlul Bayt and the divinely appointed messengers of the past, they have all left these gems of knowledge and wisdom, which have been able to transcend time, space, and history. And even in this holy month of Ramadan, we are able to benefit from the statements of this universal persona of Imam Ali. In one such instance, we find that His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, says, "Friendship and kindness must never be expected from kings. For tyrant rulers, to establish their position, have no mercy. not even upon their closest of friends. Such a beautiful and amazing statement from His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam. Yes, for the most part, we don't live in an era where kings rule, other than a few places across the earth who still follow this archaic and old-fashioned style of governance. Most people in today's day and age, most nations in today's age and day, they either have presidents or prime ministers in order to govern the land. But is a president or a prime minister anything other than a temporary king? Now here, Imam Ali says that friendship and kindness must never be expected from a king. Now he's talking about here, if we're going to talk about presidents and prime ministers, we are talking about tyrannical, oppressive, cruel, evil presidents and prime ministers. And from such an individual, we must never expect friendship and kindness. What is interesting is that before the elections, they act like they are your best friend. And when they come into power, we find that they are exactly the opposite. And so from these tyrant kings and these tyrant rulers and these tyrant governors and these tyrant governments and tyrant presidents and tyrant parliaments and tyrant prime ministers, we should not expect any kind of friendship and kindness. Because these tyrant rulers and presidents and prime ministers and parliaments and senators and these tyrant governments, when they want to establish their position, they will have no mercy, not even on the closest of their friends. Yes, they will have mercy on those people who paid for their campaigns. They will have mercy on people who helped them to reach their position. But everybody else is just a civilian casualty. So do not expect friendship and kindness from tyrannical and oppressive leaders. And please, don't fall for their lies. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger."
قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
أن And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
There are actually five different situations where Ali challenged people by saying, Saluni, Saluni. Ask me before you lose me. In one, he says something very amazing. He says, Ayyuhan Nas. And this was probably declared in Basra, where he says, Saluni, Saluni, qablan tafqiduni, fa'ana bituruqi as-sama' a'lamu minni bituruqi al-'ard. Ask me whatever you want, because I am more familiar with the path and the highways of the heavens than the earth. This is where we see the irony as far as the Muslims are concerned, that a person stood up. Ali is saying, ask me whatever you want. I know the ways of the heavens and the skies better than the ways of the earth. A fellow stands up. This is the father of Umar ibn Sa'd. Sa'd. أخبرني كم في رأسي ولحيتي من طاقتي شعري. He says, Ali, tell me how many strands of hair are there on my head and my beard. Is this what you want to know from Ali? Amir al-Mu'minin was very disappointed. He says, but Rasulullah told me about you. Rasulullah told me that you will ask this question. And let me let you know, you don't have to know the number of the strands of the hair on your head and the beard, but you should know there is one malak sitting on each one of them and doing la'nat on you. And from your offspring will be one who is going to kill my son Hussein. And this is the tragedy of the Muslim world. The Arab world has a large non-Muslim population in Egypt as well as Lebanon. One of the famous Christian poets of this time, Khalil Gibran Khalil, made a comment in the preface that he wrote for a book about Amir al-Mu'minin written by his friend, where he says, when I study the life of Ali, I actually have a big complaint with the Creator. That of God, oh God, if you wanted to create a person like Ali, why did you send him at a time when people could not appreciate him?
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Classified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and welcome to the latest edition of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. It's well recognised that Western media outlets are consistently biased against the struggle of the Palestinian people. But how does this work in practice? In today's programme, we'll examine the impact of Zionist infiltration on the media. What role do Zionist journalists and organisations play in neutering independent coverage of Palestine? We'll be focusing on the situation in Britain and in Germany, and I'll be speaking to experts on this issue to find out more. But first, we've got this special report